Welcome to show number 76 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by SportsCardRadio.com. What is happening, everybody? How's it going? Back again on the radio, on the podcast, whatever you want to call it. Just great to be here. Been an exciting month for me. I haven't recorded a podcast. It hasn't been, well, I guess maybe it has been about a month. But time flies. I tell you what, when you're having fun, when you're collecting cards, buying and selling on eBay, check out my cards. Really those places exclusively right now. It's a lot of fun. So I probably bought more cards and sold more cards in the past month or two than I have in any time in the past 3 or 4 years. So even toward the tail end of having my store, when the recession was at its kind of getting into its peak, or in its valley, I guess you could say, I wasn't selling a whole lot of cards. So it is nice to actually sell some cards and for a profit. So I've been doing that. So it's been exciting. Checked out the TriStar show in San Francisco, card show in San Francisco. So I'll talk about that maybe in a little bit. Picked up some boxes, and if you've hung out on the forum, we've done 2 1-day contests for those right after the NBA games each night. So Dallas, I guess, won last night. They took down Oklahoma, and then Miami and Chicago plays, and by the time you listen to it, that game's probably over and done with, so they may be even on to their next game. So we'll see what happens in those series. NBA, I can't say the most exciting teams are in it in terms of fan base, in terms of large fan base, although Chicago has a large fan base, and Miami with all their players, and that's a large state. They probably are kind of back in the Miami because they got all the superstars, but in terms of, you know, the Bostons and the Lakers, obviously me being a Laker fan, I'm just a bitter Lakers fan. I know Dallas has a ton of fans, and they've been selling out their arena for a while, so I'm glad to see some new, quote-unquote, new NBA teams get a look, because it really has been the Lakers and the Celtics, and before that it was Chicago, but they have a whole new look now, so it is exciting, and the Spurs have won several titles as well, so it's good to see some newer teams, quote-unquote, get a chance at the title, and so we'll get a chance to see that, although Miami's won one recently, but it, again, is another team that has a total facelift since then, so it is really exciting, and we'll see who's able to go over that hump this year, and it should make NBA really exciting next year if they can work it all out. So, but that wasn't my plan today, is to talk about the NBA, but we do have some nice basketball box breaks. We've been doing quite a few. I did a couple personal ones of Bowman to send in to check out my cards, and that's probably a perfect segue into our new segment. We're going to be talking about several different things, maybe not so many. I had another piece of paper around here with more news on it, but conveniently, I can't find that. But this is more of the current news the last week or so. And some of you may know this, but if you haven't, it might help you out, make some decisions in your collecting, or just some general hobby news on the way here. Check out my cards. I was saying I opened up some Bowman boxes, 2011 Bowman, hit up Bryce Harper. I ended up selling some of that stuff on eBay because there still wasn't a whole lot when I busted. So I figured, why wait and just sell it on eBay? But I do have quite a few prospects and some inserts and some golds and purples and oranges and whatever to send to check out my cards. And it just turns out that they have a new special. So if you're interested in that site, or if you're thinking about testing it out, they have a special here. It's 8 weeks. It's actually like a voucher. They call them like vouchers, or like a gift certificate or something like that. But basically it gives you 500 cards for 15 cents a piece at 8 weeks. And that's a special. They normally do 4 weeks at around 20 cents. And if they happen to be busy or something like that, then they bump you down to 15. But it looks like it's maybe had been offered to other sellers, maybe higher volume sellers, but it sounds like now it's open to everybody. You can get, I don't know, you have to go to their blog. It explains a little bit more. You have to call, check out my cards on the phone, and buy these vouchers. Sounds like either over the phone or make the agreement over the phone. So it's something you'll want to check out their site if you want to know more about it. But the kicker on this deal is they actually have, if you send in your cards before the end of this month, they'll be on the site by the end of July, I think. So they'll actually get on there in 4 weeks. So at 15 cents, that's actually 5 cents off a card, times 500, that's a decent amount of money. I think it's $78 per, and I think I did $486 cards for like $100. $8.20 before they ran this special. My cards are actually clearing this week that I sent to them about 4 weeks ago, so I'm kind of excited. I'll have 500 cards, or about 486 cards to be exact, to play around and see if anybody's interested in any of the cards that I have on there. So we'll see what happens there, but I've got a whole big stack of Bowman and some other cards that I bought at the TriStar show to send in them. But so if you weren't aware of that deal, or if it was something that you were thinking about trying out, they have a nice sale going on right now, and so you might want to take advantage of that. And I'll probably end up getting one and send in 500 probably this next week, and then probably maybe buy a second one and hold on to it and maybe wait. Because to get 500 cards, it takes me, I mean, I have to go and spend $60 on three blasters so to get anywhere close to that amount of cards now. So it is a lot of cards. So if you don't have that many cards, it's maybe not a great option. But if you got a ton, just sit around your house, and your wife or whoever, your roommates or whoever is giving you problems about taking up so much space with all the cards, well, maybe it's time to get some of them off your hands and put them in the hands of Check Out My Cards and see what you can do. You actually can sell. It takes time, but selling cards one by one on eBay takes time. Scanning them and writing out all the descriptions, they kind of do that all that for you. Once they're on the site, it's pretty easy. You just kind of pick your prices and just keep an eye on the fees are actually really low. People seem to I can see if you're shipping the cards to yourself, it might not work out for one or two cards, but for me, I don't want any of these cards. I don't want to ship them. I don't have the space anyways. I just want them all on the side. If I buy a card, I want to turn around and sell it the next day if I can. So it works out for me. So if you're that way, it probably these little vouchers that they're giving out are pretty good. And on the same note, they actually were hiring this last week. I think they actually, probably getting anticipation for these deals, they actually hired, I think, two or three more people last week. If you live up in the Pacific Northwest, I believe this company is in Washington State or Oregon. I'm not exactly. I think they're in Washington State. Obviously, if you're shipping, obviously I should know since I've shipped cards to them, but I don't remember their address offhand. I think it's there in Washington State or something like that. So you can actually work for them, and it sounds like they're doing pretty good business if they're hiring, and I'm sure they'll hire again if these promotions go well and they get a bunch of cards in and people are enjoying the site and buying and selling cards and shipping them to themselves and all that stuff. So that's something to keep an eye out if you're in the market for a new job. In terms of new jobs, we might as well keep the job theme rolling here. Upper Deck is actually hiring, and they have corporate offices in Southern California, and I think they're moving down the street at that facility, but they're actually hiring at their facility in Morrisville, North Carolina, and it's on 1001 Aviation Boulevard. And that's in Morrisville, North Carolina. So they're hiring there. That's their I read this off the Upper Deck blog. They're hiring there because they're moving their customer service department there. And that's like a fulfillment warehouse. And they might even do printing of cards there. I'm not exactly sure if they do that there or not. But basically what they were implying was a lot of their cards, they made kind of a good point, is they used to have their customer service in Southern California. That might not make a lot of sense because minimum wage is high here and taxes and all that BS, if you're a business owner, you know, basically overhead is very high here. Now, I don't know about Morrisville, North Carolina, but I know a little bit about South Carolina, and they have given BMW some fairly generous tax liens in Greenville, South Carolina, to build a large facility there. Obviously, they benefit with jobs in the community, homes, and all that stuff being built. So I don't know about North Carolina as much, but I can imagine they're probably slightly cheaper to run a business and have an employee than in California, but I could be wrong. But the point is they used to get cards shipped to North Carolina for like redemptions and when an athlete signed or whatever, or when they had new cards printed off, they would start in North Carolina and then come to Southern California. So there was time, there was obviously going cross country, UPS is like at least 4 days unless you're rushing it. So, and even regular mail is like 3 or 4 days unless it's getting rushed over. So it gets expensive. So they're actually cutting, it sounds like they're probably going to cut costs here, but they're also going to be able to service you better because they made the point that, hey, there's there's a delay there. Plus, we have our customer service on ground right at the facility. When things come in, they'll probably be able to keep you abreast a little more quickly than in years past. And I know Panini posts updates on their blog, like whenever cards come in, they sometimes show photos and like kind of a checklist of the cards that have come in. So hopefully we start seeing maybe the same thing from Upper Deck. So when redemptions and those kind of things start coming in, fans that have been waiting for a while can get like the most up-to-date information, and it should create a better experience. But they were hiring there. Not exactly. I think I saw that they probably still are at the time of recording this. So if you live in the North Carolina area, or you, it's beautiful there, believe me. North Carolina, South Carolina, absolutely gorgeous place to live, and there's plenty of wonderful places to play golf along the coast there and in that area. So it's a gorgeous place to live, very nice people. And so not that I would pick up, believe me, I would not pick up and leave California, but maybe if I was in another state or in another position of life, maybe I would think about it. But Morrisville, North Carolina, if you're recent college grad, got nothing to do, and you want to work for Upper Deck, it looks like they're hiring. And check out my cards, just got done hiring, but I can imagine they might be hiring in the future as well. And I know Topps usually is hiring for various positions, and they're up in New York. And Panini's in Dallas. I don't see as many hiring opportunities from them, but Beckett is also in the Texas and Dallas area, so you might want to check on that. And that's our job update. So I've noticed unemployment rates inching down this week. We always get those reports. They inch down, but in some states they actually go up. I guess in the Midwest, farming and like commodities and things like that have led to people getting more jobs there. But on the coastal, like New York's and the coasts, where it's a little more expensive to live and things like that, and a little denser population and more competitive to get jobs, the unemployment rate has been going down much slower. And out here in California, it is still a massive problem. And until that gets fixed, housing and investments and other things have no chance to really recover at a quick rate. I think we're in for a long, slow process out here in California, because we have to balance our budget. But I could have a whole podcast about that. We could be just like the United States government running up those $2 trillion. I don't know if we could get up to the $1 trillion debt, but we could run up easily a couple $100 million debt here in California and be in a good spot, especially now, but we can't do it. But we'll keep going, given that Upper Deck's in California. I guess that rant is not irrelevant. So, but they do, not relevant to California not being able to balance their budget, I guess. Exquisite redemptions. A lot of people were wondering about 2010 Exquisite Football. They have these mystery redemptions. I remember Chris Carlin from Upper Deck at the Sports Card Summit in Las Vegas a couple months ago was asking the card shop owners, hey, do you like mystery redemptions? And most of them were like, yeah. But, most of the feedback I've heard was negative. And I think they tend to – I've gotten emails from people wondering what if the checklist has been released, what the players are going to be. I know Upper Deck has gotten flooded with emails. So they made a statement on that. If you have one of those redemptions in there, or you're thinking about getting one or whatever, this is their statement off their blog. The players we have in this mix are representative of the others who are in the set, primarily – mid-range players. So if you're expecting like the top end guys and this to be the superstars, doesn't necessarily sound the case, but they do say primarily mid-range players, so there's probably a few mixed in there, but don't expect it to be all like case hits and stuff like that. So it sounds like those are going to be for the most part mid-range players, not necessarily bad cards, and given that most of them have only played a season, or some of them might not even got to play that much, mid-range, I would rather have them put, I don't know if they put quote around mid-range, because if I was a football player in the NFL and I was drafted, some of those guys probably in the second, third round, fourth round, and somebody called me mid-range, I'd probably be like, well, maybe you're a mid-range manufacturer, but I don't know. I don't know. I can't believe mid-range. The guy's in the NFL. Nobody's mid-range in the NFL. We're looking at some of the best athletes, best conditioned athletes, and in some cases, some of the smartest athletes in the world. So, but that's my little, I see that terminology technology all over the place, and you especially see it in fantasy. And I'm definitely a victim of it too. Sometimes I'm trash on a player. I'm like, oh, he sucks. He was whatever. The guys in the NBA, the guys in the NFL, the guys in the MLB, even these guys in the minor leagues that my brother's been checking out and stuff. These guys are, you know, top of the line athletes, and it's just such a competitive business. It's really hard to get to the top of the top. You know, Tiger Woods, Albert Pujols, those kind of guys that have achieved success over many years. And Tiger's trying to get back there, so we'll see what happens to him. But I guess he got hurt. I guess he was in that Players' Champion. Tiger Woods, just to go on a random off-topic thing here, Tiger Woods was like, and I remember reading an article, he was entered in the Players' Championship, and that's played on the TPC somewhere in Florida, I think, or Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida. I've never been there, and I only know through secondhand knowledge, but it's a very difficult course, much more difficult than the guys make it look on TV and the way it comes across. Very difficult course. And Tiger was quoted in the paper that he hadn't practiced and hadn't hit a golf ball since the Masters, and he was showing up to the Players' Championship. This was like a couple weeks ago. So this is old news, but I just thought it was amazing when I was reading it. He said he hadn't practiced, hadn't really hit a ball. His practice round and his practice there was kind of the first time he had hit a ball all week, and then he ended up playing 9 holes and shooting like 4 over, and he had to quit. So not really quit, but I was just thinking, man, he just really set him up for that. He really set himself up for that. I mean, I can't imagine going to a PGA Tour event and playing and not having practice in like a month. That's just... I don't know who you think you... I mean, even Tiger Woods, even as great as this guy in shooting 4 over, under those circumstances, nobody could do that. I can't... There's just nobody that can take that amount of time off and expect to go out there and play at a higher level without practicing, without playing, without getting focused on the round at all. It's just I just felt bad for him a little bit, but I didn't feel bad for him so much because he kind of set himself up for bouncing him out of that front... after the front nine. It's just like... I mean, on the same level, I'm like an 80s shooter golfer. And so if I want to compete in a tournament, I've got like a 6, 7, 8 handicap, somewhere in that range. You know, those are competitive tournaments. There's people there that shoot pretty good. But if I can't enter the city tournament, which I think runs every year. I might actually enter it this year because I think it's only like $60, $70, and you get like 2 rounds. And it's fairly competitive. It's fun. And the people usually you get to play with are pretty funny guys. And it's fun. You get to learn. And you have to walk and stuff. So it's a lot of fun. So I might do it this year. But I remember competing in years past, and it was like competitive. But I would prepare. You know what I mean? Like I would practice. I would not feel comfortable about going to these city tournaments and having to tee off in front of like people that you don't know and playing with people that you don't know and that you haven't practiced in a month. So I couldn't believe Tiger went out when I was reading that in the paper. I was like, wow, this guy's just incredible. Is incredible. If he comes out there and makes the cut, he plays incredible. But I just thought, man, any human is just can't do that. You can't play high level golf and not practice. So I really am concerned about Tiger. If he can't get his health back, he's not going to be able to practice, and no way you're going to be able to win golf tournaments on a regular basis if you don't practice. He's going to turn into like every other golfer who wins a major once or twice or 3 or 4 times if they're lucky in their whole career. So to win him year after year after year, you got to practice a lot. So we'll see. If old Tiger, that's my Tiger Woods news, my obligatory Tiger Woods news. But to get back onto sports cards, although some of you might have, like me, I have Tiger Woods autograph, it's going down every single day. So some obligatory Tiger Woods news might be appropriate each show. But in terms of more appropriate sports card news, Gypsy Queen autographs, I think we pointed this out on the show. They couldn't get on a previous show, they couldn't get the autograph. I don't know what happened. They made a mistake. They couldn't get all of the autographs. They were guaranteeing like 2 autographs or like one autograph in every box, and there were like none or one or whatever. So you send in the UPC code on hobby boxes of Gypsy Queen, and you get an autograph. And they just began fulfilling those and shipping those back to people. So if you have some of those out, you should be getting those back shortly. And if you're like our fan forum member, Hamburger Ron, you should get that back fairly quickly because we just opened the box. Thanks to BaseballFactorySets.com for being very generous. I'll be honest with you guys. We had a deal with BaseballFactorySets.com for 6 months. And honestly, all it involved was like 2 boxes of cards, but they actually sent us this Gypsy Queen box, and I think another box. So they've been very generous, so I really appreciate them, and I wanted to mention that they actually have gone over and above what we even like kind of agreed to, I guess, 6 or 7 months ago, for like little banners on our site and stuff. So hopefully it sounds like maybe it's working out for them, and so that's good, and I appreciate them hooking everybody up. And so people like Hamburger Ron and some other people gonna get an autograph, got some other cards. I remember shipping out a whole box of cards. I think it was Vikings Fan Forever or something like that. Got a whole bunch, a whole stack of cards. So he should be, he even got some hits in there. So some nice cards in there. So Gypsy Queen, point of the segment, Gypsy Queen autographs began shipping. So that about wraps up our news segment, our little 20-minute news segment, or kind of intro news segment. So now we'll get on to some other things. I went to the TriStar. We're going to take a break. But to preface our next segment, went to the TriStar Sports Card Show and bought all kinds of stuff. So I'll talk about that on the next segment. And we'll talk about 2011 Bowman Baseball. That came out. So we'll talk about that, maybe some of the prospects that are in there. Probably would be better to have my brother on, but he's like at a 3-game series, Stockton Port. So he's at baseball games on the next couple of days. So we might be able to get him on the tail half of this. If I don't, looks like I'll probably have enough to put up a show. But I'm planned on getting my brother on for a prospect show. And we just haven't been able to get together and record it. But we'll be able to do that. It might be on the back end of this show, but we'll find out. I don't know. But more than likely, we'll just talk about 2011 Bowman. But right after this break, we'll talk about my day at the TriStar show with my girlfriend, Anne. So we'll talk about that right after this. To talk actually about two things. We're going to talk about the TriStar show in San Francisco, card show in San Francisco. But I also wanted to talk about the NFL rookie premiere. It happened May 18th through the 21st, so just a little while ago in Los Angeles, California. And actually, it's going on as I'm recording this. So 36 of the top NFL rookies were invited. And actually, there was a brief period where Cam Newton wasn't going to be there. He actually, I think, put out a press release saying that he wasn't going to be there, or let people know that he wasn't going to be there. And then he kind of changed his mind, or I think his agent or somebody told him that that wouldn't be a very good idea, that he probably wants to show up here. And especially if they don't play football this year, it'd probably be a very good idea to show up this week. So he did, and he is now a part of the 36 rookies that have appeared at the show. And there was quite a few pictures that were put out by the companies, Topps and Panini, who were there. And there were some pretty interesting photos. I was excited to see the Bengals obviously picked AJ Green. And so he was like, he was all over the place. He had, you know, he's being one of the top offensive players selected outside of Cam Newton and some of the other quarterbacks. He's going to get a lot of attention on some of the rookie cards and stuff like that. So it's cool seeing his cards. I doubt I'll be able to afford any. But I did, one of my strategies this year is because the Bengals have, we got the QB, Andy Dalton, and then we have AJ Green. And then we also got a bunch of other guys. But really, those two guys, I think, are really going to be going to have some nice cards and going to have hopefully plenty of cards to choose from. So we'll see what happens. But I was thinking this year, instead of, you know, buying box. I was thinking, man, you know, I'll probably maybe buy their cards outright if I can find a decent deal on either one of them, Andy Dalton or AJ Green. I figure I'm a fan of the team, and it'd be so silly if these guys do turn out to be like our franchise players for the first time ever. I mean, we thought Carson and Ocho, they gave us lots of good stats and they gave us lots of good times, but didn't give us a whole lot of playoff wins, zero to be exact. So it'd be silly if I didn't have any of their cards. So I'll probably try to get a couple of their cards as the season goes on. But my plan is there's always all these box breaks and all these football box breaks. And I imagine once this product starts coming out, there'll be all kinds of box breaks. And the Bengals, I'm sure, will be popular from the investment standpoint. However, being that there's far more popular teams to collect, and even the Panthers with Cam Newton, and there's lots of other teams with Aaron Rodgers doing so well for the Packers, and you still got Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and all these guys on other teams. Those teams, and the Cowboys, obviously, and even the Raiders, some of these teams are still very popular, much more popular than the Bengals are, have much larger fan bases. So I might be able to squeak in there and get some box breaks and maybe get lucky. So we'll see. It'll be fun. It'll be a fun sweat. I think that's really the point of those box breaks. I think it's a fun. And I think hopefully the people that enter all the contests, even if you don't win on our forum, or you don't win for a while, or you enter like some people, I feel bad. I'm actually thinking about throwing up a contest where if you legitimately haven't won anything, we'll put together a contest where it's like a guarantee winner for you, so you can kind of get over that hump of no win on the forums. But you know, in terms of box breaks and stuff like that, sometimes I don't mind. I did a Gypsy Queen break where actually I got one of the SPs, and I'm sending it in to check out my cards. I'll probably be able to sell it for like $2 or $3, maybe more than that. I don't know. It depends on how many other people are trying to sell it, obviously, and what the demand is to fill the set at that time, which will be 4 weeks from now. But we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if I can make like half my, I think I paid like $12 or $13 for the box break. So it'll be interesting to see if I can get at least a couple of dollars back. And that's kind of not really the point, but the point I was going to make is the sweat is so fun. If you have the Bengals in like a nice box break for 2011 football, you know, you might have paid $20 for the break or whatever. But an AJ Green autograph or a really rare Andy Dalton autograph, or maybe even I saw plenty of combo cards. That's like the perfect combo card. Hey, that would be awesome. To watch that on YouTube and to have the chance at that. So that's what I'll be doing, is more for the gamble and kind of the sweat watching on YouTube. I think that's actually kind of fun. But in terms of the photos that I saw put out, my brother put up a little page, Topps Inception, which comes out here pretty soon. Those cards look really nice. And that's really impressive that they have the guys in their uniforms and the signed on card. You don't normally see that at the rookie premiere. In fact, that might be one of the first times. Usually they're done on fabric, or they're done on stickers, or they're done on helmets, or they're done on the piece of the jersey or whatever, and then it's inserted into a window or whatever. But these are actually on card autographs. They look like mid-season or late season quality in terms of the photograph of the player in his jersey. Looks like he's actually, like, obviously hasn't even played a game. Obviously he's not even eligible to play a game because he doesn't have a contract, and the teams aren't even playing. So there's no practice shot, so it's pretty impressive that they have these guys in their NFL uniforms and they're signing them on card. So I think that's going to be a pretty nice product, and people are going to be looking for that. There was an interesting picture. Mark Ingram, who I believe is a running back for the Saints, he was drafted somewhere in the first round. He tweeted a picture. He right underneath my brother has a photo of him wearing number 22 on his reception jersey, but he's here in front of a Topps booth wearing, he says, haha, I'm wearing, haha, I'm at the rookie premiere and I have on like 17 Saints jersey. And he posted a picture, and it's a really funny picture. He has like obviously literally 17 Saints jersey. So he looks like he has huge shoulder pads on, and he like gained a bunch of weight, and he gives it the double thumbs up sign, and he's like flexing in another picture. It's a funny photo, but I noticed he was wearing, and a lot of other people noticed on Twitter, that he was wearing number 80. And a lot of people speculated that I think the Saints have a guy that is named Graham, and Ingram happens to be only a couple letters off Graham, and I think Graham was number 80 or is number 80 for the Saints. So it's just interesting that he's wearing an 80. They're probably, obviously he's wearing 17 jerseys, so he fulfills his player worn requirement. So you see how they do that, or at least some players do it. They just put them all on at once and then take them off. But it's number 80, so it's not even his jersey, and some have speculated on the back of the jersey is probably not even his last name. So it's I thought that was kind of interesting, and just someone who has sold Reebok jerseys. Those are some of the most faked and not replicated jerseys. Doesn't even look like he has on like the pro cut ones that he has on in the photo. The number 80 ones, it looks like he has on, it doesn't even look like a real Reebok jersey. So the real, my brother has a photo on here of Pettis. It looks like he plays for maybe the Rams or somebody with blue and yellow. It's the only team I can think of in the NFL that has those colors. So I believe that's the Ram. You can see the way the sleeves are cut on that jersey. If you're really into football jerseys, you can easily tell a fake Reebok jersey in person by the quality of the fabric and then usually how the sleeves are cut and underneath the arms and the elastic that is in between there. So I don't know if this, I'm just speculating that this might not even be, I don't know where they get their wholesale grip. They get them direct from Reebok, then I'm mistaken. But if they get them through somewhere else, it's possible that the, it doesn't even look like a real Reebok jersey to me, but I could be totally wrong on that point. But the point being is Mark Ingram tweeted a picture of himself wearing literally 17 Saints jerseys, and he's wearing number 80. Many people speculated it's not even his last name on the back. They're going to cut those up, put those into packs. Yes, he did wear them, but he's not number 80. He's number 22. So the pieces around the numbers and all that stuff, you'll think, you'll try to picture in yourself in the head, hey, where is this around number 22? Well, it's actually number 80 for him. And since he had 17 of these jerseys on, that's a whole lot of fat. That's a tremendous amount of fabric. These are huge. He's a big guy, it looks like. Very muscular guy. Very built and lean, muscular looking guy, at least in the photos, unless those are kind of cropped out too. But even in his photos that he tweeted out, he looks like he has big forearms. So interesting. I found that to be interesting that he's actually putting on a jersey there that's not even his number, and many obviously speculated it wasn't even his name. So who knows what's going on there. So that's just buyer beware. I'm really making that point to say, hey, buyer beware on this player worn stuff. And it's oftentimes we're at the mercy of what the companies decide to do. If the quote-unquote true rookie card is like a piece of fabric and an autograph, or some of the best rookies in a set is like a piece of fabric, you know, patch autograph card or whatever, you're kind of, I mean, if you want the card, I mean, you're going to have to go for it. So, but other people like me, I tend to avoid the player. I don't try to pay, I'll put it this way, I don't try to pay over and above for anything player worn. I won't pay so much more. I will pay a little bit more for a lower serial number or like an on-card autograph, definitely, but I definitely won't overpay if it's player worn on there. So it's just, that's just my opinion. You could definitely have your own. The guy put it on and, you know, he has his jersey. That's as close as we can get. Game worn stuff I think is really cool, and I think if the companies did a better job of labeling, hey, this was used in a game, or when actual the game was, what his stats were, what he did in the game, stuff like that, that would be even more. They used to do that. I think when Donruss was its own company, they used to do that, and I think they even had a full photo on the back of a lot of cards, like in 2000, I think they were experimenting with that, and through the early 2000s, if you look at on the back of some of the early memorabilia pieces that Donruss did, you'll often, you know, they'll tell you the game it was used, or the game range it was used, and they'll actually have a photo of the football or jersey or whatever it was on the front. Like a lot of times they use footballs back in the day. I don't see football used a whole lot anymore, and that's curious. I think that's still a pretty attractive, even though the football may or may not be attributed back to the player. I still think that's an option I don't see used maybe as much. Maybe it's just not cost effective because the footballs are so small, and cutting them up for the price may or may not be worth it, but I'm not sure. But the point being, be careful with this player-worn stuff, and in my opinion, I wouldn't overpay just because Mark Ingram put it on. As we've seen here, he's wearing number 80. That's just because Mark Ingram put that photo out. There's a lot of other guys that put on jerseys. Who knows what number they were, what name on the way back. So for me, AJ Green, I'm looking for, you know, something on card or just something nice, you know, even if it's a sticker autograph and it's got a patch on there. If it's a nice card at a good price, I'm willing to go on it. But again, for the third time, I'm not going to overpay for player-worn stuff for the main reason, what's going on the photo shoot. But not to end it on a negative note, it is great that we have this because this means we'll have football cards. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows the laws and how technically everything were to work out if the NFL were not to have a season. If they were like, you know, if all the owners were like, you know, screw the players, and the players were like, screw the owners, we're not playing, we're sitting out, no replacement players, no football, you know, basically screw the fans. That's possible. I don't see that happening, but let's say it does happen. I don't think everybody knows whether or not, you know, all the cards will get released in the same time frames and then the same dates, and you know, we'll have the plethora of stuff, but at least we're going to have these rookie autographs, because these companies didn't just pay a grip load of money to send representatives and cards and jerseys and all this stuff to Los Angeles, California, one of the most expensive places to be in the whole world, and not to mention your gas driving around. It takes forever if you take the freeways, but it's one of those things. You know, the rookie premiere is a great event and it has tons of great things to bring to collectors. And the best thing is that we get all these rookies and they're signing on their cards, and we're not going to miss a beat with rookie autographs, even though we might not see them play, or a lot of them, especially because of no training camp and the coaches might not have a lot of time to develop them and get them into the playbooks and things like that. It's good that we're going to have autographs. A lot of them might not play. A lot of them we might not see potential until the following season, or until late in the season, or the playoffs, or until injuries occur and things like that. But some of these guys will play. I know AJ Green and Andy Dalton. It looks like we got number one QB and number one wide receiver right there. So there's one tandem right there that's probably, the way it stands now, unless major things change, is going to be one and two top most important positions, two of the most important positions on the team. So we'll see how it all plays out. Like you, I'm hoping there's football, but at least we got this rookie premiere photo shoot out of the way, and we're going to have cards, and we're going to have things going on in that situation. So excited to see that. And what I took from it too was, I don't have all the photos here of all the cards, but Topps Inception to me looks like a really, really nice early season product. Looks like a high level, at least the on-card autograph rookies. That's usually not something you see until mid-season. And I think that set comes out really soon, within a couple weeks. So that's pretty exciting to see. And I'm sure we'll see all the other stuff from Upper Deck and Panini and Topps and probably some other companies. They'll come in there and they'll throw their rookie autographs on there too. So we'll see what happens. But at least we got the photo shoot out of the way. We got that segment out of the way. I wanted to talk a little bit about the TriStar show. I showed up maybe only a couple hours after it started, and my girlfriend came with me just like last year. So it was a lot of fun going there, and we ate at a really nice restaurant afterwards. It was like Goat Hill Pizza or something. I found it on to get to the end of the day first, I guess. We actually ate there afterwards. It's amazing, like, the difference a year makes. I think a year ago I can barely pay my cell phone bill this year, but at least I have an iPhone this year. And what was cool is I've always heard about this app called Yelp, which is Y-E-L-P. And they have this app on, I think, every phone. So I downloaded that. And what's cool is it takes your location and it shows you anything nearby, from, I think, restaurants to maybe gas stations to just about anything. So I kind of searched it because we were kind of stuck in traffic as San Francisco. We kind of left at kind of a bad time. We probably should have stayed maybe another hour or two. But it's kind of tough walking around. And once you kind of see all the cards and stuff, you're ready to go. You're ready to go home and maybe look on eBay and check out my cards and see if you got any good deals and stuff. We found this great restaurant, so that was cool. And so I recommend, if you're like stuck in traffic or you're stuck in a city, San Francisco is one of those cities where it's like, people from California, most people I know, and my uncle said this the other day, and my uncle actually lives a little closer to the Bay Area. He was like, I don't know how to get around San Francisco. He was like, I don't know where anything is in San Francisco. I know how to get to the bridge, basically, and that's it. I don't know. I'm lost after that. And that's kind of how I am. I go to that city, and it's compacted in a tight area, and there's water and bridges, and it's fairly difficult sometimes to get around. And the streets, the inner streets, are all very hilly and up and down, and it's very slow going, you know, sometimes traffic-wise. So I kind of felt like that when I was in San Francisco, but it made it very easy. Finding this app, you can, boom, bring it up on the map, get directions, turn-by-turn directions, all with a couple clicks. So I felt, man, a year, I'm sure they had that app maybe a year ago, but it just seems... A year ago, it wasn't quite as accessible for everybody, especially broke people like me. But a year later, the technology is more accessible to everybody, and it's a little more affordable, I believe. So I just think it's a pretty awesome thing. So I found that, aside from the show, to be very entertaining. I went to the show, and you should check out our member, San Jose Fuji, on our forum. I think he puts a link to his blog. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but you should check out his blog. He posted some of his scores. I think he went the following day. I was there Friday, like I said, a couple hours after it opened. So not everybody had set up or had fully set up, but I'd got in and I kind of wanted to get there first because I was looking for really cheap singles, and I ended up only buying five or six, but I got a Brandon Roy, which was pretty cool. I got a Brandon Roy on-card autograph from 2009-2010 Prestige Basketball. I think it was from the Playmaker set or something like that. And it's signed on a card. It's numbered out of like 57 or something like that. I don't know what the quote-unquote book value is, but I got it for $2. So I thought that was a pretty darn good deal, even though I know his career is probably pretty much over, especially as a high-end elite player that scores a lot of points. He will be affected. I think he would take right now to have his role the last half of the season with the Blazers, where he's kind of an effective player off the bench, occasionally playing heavy minutes, occasionally taking a night off or taking heavy minutes on a blowout game or a game where it's not a good matchup or he's feeling sore or whatever. Because I heard him say that he's hoping to get two or three more years out of his knees. It just seems like it's that bad of a situation. But I figured I'd take a gamble, $2. I'll send it to check out my cards with their 15-cent deal. If you package it right, you only pay about, if you send 500 cards, you only pay about 2 cents a card, sometimes less than that, actually. I think it was only about a penny and a half or something to send 500 cards to them. It was like $12 to send it priority to them. Maybe it's because I'm on the West Coast and it's only a state or two up for me, and it's not a very short trip. So, or it's a very short trip, I should say. So I can spend $2 on the autograph, pay another 16 cents. So I'm in for 216. I bet I could sell the card for $3 on Check Out My Cards, because it is an on-card autograph. It's really low serial numbered. It probably books out at least maybe like $15 to $20. Might be higher than that because it has a low serial number. So I'll probably be able to sell that card. So I was looking for deals like that. I got a Taj Gibson a jersey card, which was pretty cool. I got an Austin Day. It was number one of like 249 or something out of Classics Basketball. So I was excited about that. I got the number one. And I don't know if people actually collect that or if that's like a tremendous, probably a very slight premium. But for $2, I figured why not. And I got another guy. I can't remember his name. He was like a second round pick on for the Rockets or something. I got his Classics autograph. So I thought that was cool. And I got a Paul Millsap autograph for $2. It was out of SP Game Used Significance autograph. I thought that was pretty cool for $2. He had a really good season. It kind of tailed off at the end of the year, but he had a really, really good, strong start of the season. It seemed like once Jerry Sloan left Utah, his play and maybe even his minutes kind of went downhill. They even made that trade. But I can imagine if he can pick up off next year at a hot start, I'll be able to sell that card for a couple. I'm sending all those cards, I think, to check out my cards for only, 15 cents. I might as well throw them in there, see if I can make a couple bucks back. We'll see. It's just kind of my own experiment, I guess, to say, to see if you can go to these card shows, obviously, to make money. There's so many other better ways to make money. But why I'm there, I'm kind of a businessman, while I'm having a good time with my girlfriend and stuff like that, I just think it would be fun to see if I can't chop out like 80 cents, 90 cents or something buying cards. But I also got Beckett's. If any of you need book values from anything from 2009 back, you can send me an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com. I have book values on baseball, football, and basketball. I've got all those things. I kind of like flipping through those. And seeing the kind of sets. Sometimes I get reminded of a set when I'm doing a, you know, a 2011 set. It's sometimes they're mimicking a set that I remember back in the 90s, and I go back through the Beckett's, these big books, and they were only $10 at the show. Obviously, they're a year old, and you probably can get on Amazon and buy the ones that are a year old for not that much. But for me, that's as good. I think it's like a $30 book, or maybe the baseball one might be even $40 because it's pretty big. But for me, it's pretty cool. Obviously, that information on their website, and it's on plenty of other websites and all over the internet if you want to do the searches. But the book, having the book handy right there is always kind of nice. So you can just flip back real quick to the sets that you think it is, and you can. That's basically what I use it for. Is I kind of look at the new sets and I say, hey, that kind of reminds me of a set I remember collecting, or I had boxes full of that stuff. Let me go see, a little bit more about what that set was like back in those days. So kind of reminds you of the good old days. Or maybe not the good old days. I still think collecting, I think it gets better and better. I think the companies maybe don't improve as fast as we think they can or think we want them to, but we definitely see improvement and progression as the years goes on. And if you're in collecting a lot, you know, it's kind of like Jordan shoes. You know, Jordan shoes, a lot of people might argue, hey, the ones made in the 90s when Jordan was actually playing, those were sick. Those were awesome shoes. And for the price, looking back, they were amazing value. And maybe or not, I don't know much about the subject. Classic cars is probably a better example. A lot of people, when I drive around this Mercedes-Benz, this old Mercedes-Benz, which most of them are in horrible condition, and I think I've said it on the show, my grandma kept this car. It looks like it rolled off the Mercedes-Benz lot like 2 days ago. So she kept it garaged. I don't know where she took it to get waxed or what detailed, and so she obviously did that because it's in just incredible condition. I always get people saying, "Hey, they don't make them like they used to." And I'm thinking to myself, "Well, I've seen a couple S600s and the E classes, like the E550s or the E330s, Mercedes Benz and the SL500s. Mercedes makes tremendous cars these days, and I can never ever see myself being that wealthy, or even if I did have the money to buy a $70,000 or $80,000 luxury automobile, I think I'd buy a used one because they tend to go down in price. They tend to be about half as much if they have about 80,000 miles on them. So I don't think I would enjoy the car that much less if somebody else had put about 100,000 miles on it. So maybe I'll put, because I was lucky enough to have friends in college that they were lucky enough to have parents that could afford them those vehicles. So I have driven some very nice luxury vehicles, and it is just, I wouldn't say they're worth the money, but I can see why they're priced so much higher than luxury vehicles. But just like twice last week, I was driving around in the Mercedes, and I would get out and people say, "Hey man, nice car. They don't make them like that. Those things are built like a rock. You could drive those, you know, from here to Florida and back." You know, I'm like, yeah, you're right. But I'm always thinking in the back of my mind, I would trade this in a heartbeat for a 2006, 2005, any kind of brand new Mercedes, because those cars just look incredible. I haven't driven a new one, like a 2008, 10, you know, a 2011. Those cars just look incredible to me. If you have that kind of wealth and you can afford those kind of cars, I envy you, because they just, whenever I see one in a parking lot, I always joke that, hey, here's my car right here. You know, let's hop in. Because they just, everything from the interior to the exterior and the way the body fits, just tremendous. So we kind of backtracked here. Now we're on to cars, so I'm not exactly sure what my point was, but I think I was talking about back in time. We always think, you know, they don't make cars like they used to, and it's just like classic cars, you know, just like the Mercedes-Benz. We look back and we're like, hey, they don't make them like they did in 1979 or whatever. Yeah, they don't. They don't put the chrome bumpers on them, and they don't look like they're like a half tank or whatever, like you could drive them through the desert and stuff like that. They're a little more stylish than that, but it just depends on your perception of things. I think the brand new Mercedes are awesome. I think the brand new Camaros are awesome. I have a little more experience too with brand new Camaros are awesome. I think those are awesome cars. I wouldn't buy one just because I can't afford one, and I just don't see myself buying a new car like that. But the old ones are amazing too. It just depends on who you ask, what your comfort level is, and stuff like that. And the same thing goes with cards. you know, if you collected like in the 90s like I did, and even a little bit in the 80s, you know, that was a real fun time to collect. But I tell you what, I sure wish I was like my dad's age and I was collecting. I know my dad says he had Mickey Mantles, and everybody had Mickey Mantles and Joe, and they printed a ton of those things. And the population and the distribution and everything was even less in those days than it is today. The ease of getting cards is even easier today, and they made a ton of them back then. So it just, you know, it depends on who you ask. But I think cards get better every year, and it was fun going to the TriStar show. I think it got a little bit better. I wish I was there on the weekend. I think it's popping a lot more on the weekend when there's like the big autograph guests. But I did see some disappointing tweets from TriStar where they said Willie McCovey didn't show up, and I think there was another player that wasn't, a fairly prominent player that wasn't showing up or couldn't show up. I just think that's kind of disappointing. I hope there wasn't. I know there was people there that were probably looking forward to getting his autograph, or they were one of the players that they were looking. Hopefully nobody was in the boat where they bought a $500 Mitchell Ness Willie McCovey jersey, and this was like their one time to get him, and then he doesn't show up, or something happens, a miscommunication or whatever. It's just unfortunate, and I could see how those things happen. I could see how definitely maybe traffic in the Bay Area or just downright laziness. I know the Giants had a big weekend this weekend against the A's. Sometimes those things play into it, but it's just unfortunate. I just wish maybe the athletes could notify the show a little bit more, or the show could maybe really make an emphasis on these players. Hey, it's really important if we say you're going to show up that you do, and maybe make it lucrative enough to these guys to say, hey, if you show up, it's going to be 10 grand. It's going to be a lot of money. But it may not be. I don't know. But I think maybe that's maybe the only downer on the weekend. I wasn't there when there was a lot of stock. I noticed last year there was a lot of like autographed jerseys and stuff like that. That weren't PSA DNA, that weren't like JSA, that weren't like highly certified. I saw a little bit less of that this year, at least from the stuff that I saw. Not all the tables were filled, like I said. Not everybody had gotten there. You know, I saw a little bit less of that. I was kind of glad to see that. I saw less Giant stuff, and I don't think it's because people did have Giant stuff, but I noticed a lot of Tim Lincecum and lots of like Matt Cain and all kinds of Giant stuff, lots of young Giant stuff. I think what happened is these guys sold it all. I think everybody has been selling Giant stuff, Buster Posey stuff. If you had any of his cards, if you had Madison Bumgarner, if you had any of these guys, even Brandon Belt, you sold it already. You don't have it anymore. So I saw a whole lot less Giant stuff, and I truly think it's because they sold it all. They literally sold everything, or most of what they had. A lot of what I saw was just lower end, you know, rookie cards, and base rookie cards. Last year I remember seeing autographs of everybody. I was trying to find Gary Brown and some of the younger Giants players, but I don't even see those. I don't know if they're because they're holding on to those because the new Giants blew up, but I know that Gary Brown autographs and a lot of young Giants prospects sell fairly well because the fan base got rejuvenated. I mean, we're talking when we actually drove right by the ballpark. We kind of, like I said, I don't know San Francisco very, very well. There's only a few streets I know, and it's right by the San Francisco Giants Stadium. So we ended up, it's actually right by the bridge. You almost have to drive by it. There's probably better ways than what we took, but you almost have to drive by it to get on the bridge that you need to get back to the Central Valley of California. So we drove right by it. I know it was on a Friday night, and those nights are always good sellers for any basketball games, any kind of games, even high school football games sell pretty well on Friday nights. But there were tons of people there, and I know it was against the A's, but everybody had jerseys on and hats, and that's a big sign of it too. And I think I heard that on the radio. The Giants have a great radio station. I think you can even get their app on. If you're not from this area, I think you can listen to everything but the play-by-play on the games. But KNBR 680, they have a great program. I think I heard somebody on there saying, hey, you know, one of the players said, you know, the crowd, yes, there's so many more people here on a daily basis, but it's a lot more colorful too. They're wearing orange and black, and they got the jerseys, and they got the hats, and they got the World Series gear, and even I've bought Giants hats and stuff like that. And my family took a trip to the spring training. We might not have done that if they didn't win the World. I think we did plan it out before they had won the World Series, but we might not have. I know we've always contemplated it, but definitely them winning the World Series, having such a great season, really put them over the top. So So it was cool to be in the area. It was cool to see the TriStar show. Like I said, I picked up a couple more singles. I was kind of more of a buyer this time. I picked up a couple boxes, spent like $80 on some boxes. That was a pretty good buy. I got a Hall of Fame basketball. I know a lot of people don't like that product. It's more of a gamble, I think. But for $44, it was a $100 product. I went back and looked at the sell sheet that I put up last year. It's a $100 product. So for half off, I figured, hey, it's probably worth the gamble. I know it's there's no rookies or anything like that in there. So, and that's really decreased the value of it and really hadn't boosted it up because there's no Blake Griffins and stuff like that in there. But there is Magic Johnson. There's Larry Birds and stuff like that. So I figure for the gamble, I'm willing to gamble on. Those are the players I really fell in love with. So I'm willing to gamble with those guys. And I can see if you're a young kid or kind of a younger collector, a set like that might have no interest for you. But for me, all those players, I know a lot of those. I wouldn't say I know them all, but a lot of the high-end players in that set, that was like the height of the NBA, and those were like all the guys I love. So got that set. Got longevity. We busted that. We got a Greg Monroe jersey card. That was pretty cool. We got an autographed rookie card of somebody. I can't remember his name. I think he might have played for the Rockets too. I don't know how many draft picks they had, but I don't think it was the same guy that I bought at the show. So not exactly sure on that one, but you know, it was fun going to the TriStar show. Definitely recommend anybody that, if you know, for me, it's an hour and a half drive. Sure, it was through some traffic. We could have taken the BART. I think my girlfriend mentioned that we should probably take the BART next year. We might. I don't know about taking it there and then getting over there. That's the thing. I don't know if there's like a BART drop off near the Cow Palace. So it's kind of one of those things you'd have to then probably bus yourself over there. So it might even be more convenient just to drive in there, and we could have probably picked a better time to drive through traffic because there are some nightmare. There's not that many. It's not like Los Angeles or New York where like almost 24 hours a day it's a nightmare, or even like the Las Vegas Strip, but San Francisco still gets pretty packed up. But great to be there. I recommend anybody. It was an hour, like I said, it was an hour and a half trip over there. It's worth going to. Anybody that's got a card show in the area, it's worth going to. There was lots of singles, and I was going through a lot of it. A lot of it I wasn't too interested in, to be honest with you, because I don't have a broad enough collection base, and I don't really have an interest in anything but really autographs and rookie cards, and especially basketball. I'm really into basketball. I think you can find some good deals in basketball. I think basketball could do better in promoting the game. They could definitely put the games on free TV, since the reason why I haven't followed the playoffs because I don't have cable and they don't have an online option or an affordable online option. So I just think they could do a better job. Whereas football and baseball, baseball I know puts it on TBS too, and that makes some fans upset too, but I think they have a little bit better online option sometimes for baseball, but we'll see what happens. But I think if you have a broad collect, if you like collect a whole bunch of stuff, if you like complete sets and you have a big broad collection, going to shows, I probably don't even need to tell you this, but it's definitely worth it because you'll find a ton of cards to fill your sets, from expensive to vintage. I looked at a lot of the stuff didn't have prices, and I guess, you know, I guess I go both ways on that. I believed as a card shop, you put prices on everything. I know it takes a lot of time, but when I owned a card shop, I put a price on everything. And, you know, if I didn't put a price on it, I put it in a box with a clear price on it with, you know, these are 50 cents. And I tried not to put a bunch of boxes together with all different prices. So I tried to put all the 50 cent boxes in one area, and then a whole nother area, put the 25 cent cards so they don't get kind of mixed up and stuff like that. And I tried to put little color stickers on there. If it got real complicated, you try to do that. But I try to put a price on everything. I think it just helps. But I noticed that at the card show. I think if you want to table and stuff like that, you know, if you have some higher end stuff, I could see not putting a price on it. But some of this lower end stuff, common base cards, and sometimes I was going through and I'd see some cards that I wanted, but I didn't know if the guy wanted 50 cents for a base card or 10 cents. That's a big difference for me. If you only want 10 cents for the card, I probably would have sat there and bought $10 worth. But if you want 50 cents a card, I'm probably not going to buy any, because to me it's not worth it to buy 50 cents. But, you know, maybe someone else at the show is. I think it's just better to make it more clear. So I only bought from the sellers that made it clear, and I tried to get there. There was some serious selling. Man, people were, like, pushing me out of the way. They had their list. They had their iPhones up. So I was trying not to get in the way of the people that really, really, really wanted the cards. But I was trying to get in there and scoop, you know, especially the basketball. I think there was less basketball collectors there than anybody. So going through the basketball rack, wasn't always as tough, but when there was the 2011 Bowman stacks out there, those were getting pilfered pretty quickly, so I couldn't get as many things as I maybe would have wanted to, but it was still a lot of fun going, and there was a lot of interest. A lot of about the same build. A lot of people almost had like the same spot. Beckett had like the same spot. There was all kinds of people, and there looked like there was some kind of like TV production or something going on. Somebody was going to have like some kind of TV show. It was like a really fairly elaborate, I say elaborate in quotations, but it was fairly elaborate setup. They had high, producer, like studio-like cameras. They weren't like the handheld Sony. They were like the big shoulder ones you got to put on your shoulders, and they had tripods for them, and they had all these monitors, and they had like boom mics and all this stuff, and they had like a booth set up. So I was wondering, I was curious to see if maybe that was online or something. I should have taken a picture of it, but I'll probably go back to the TriStar website and try to find a link, and I'll try to remember to put that in the show notes if I remember at the tail end of that. But that's about the tail end of this segment. Right when we come back, this podcast's gone a long time, so we're probably just going to end it with 2011 Bowman baseball that came out retail. Boy, it came out a couple days before, or about a week before, so if you were on your toes and on your game, you could have been the first one up there with the Bryce, got $100 for it. So but now they're selling for a little bit less. I say a little bit, about half as much, maybe even 75% less, but still a lot of money. So we'll talk about him and some of the other, Bryce Harper and some of the other rookies and other players found within that set. My brother's been keeping track of the Super Fractors, so we'll talk about that. This will be a pretty long show, I guess. So we'll talk about 2011 Bowman baseball right after this.
Card Collectors World is a forum where you can buy, sell, trade, and discuss sports, non-sports cards, comics, games, toys, and more. Like to win free stuff? Of course you do. We have contests with loads of free prizes, card drafts, group breaks, and more. It is 100% free to join. Come check us out at cardcollectorsworld.com.
And we are back. Time to talk about 2011 Bowman baseball. Came out May 18th. However, if you were savvy enough and your Target put it out at the right time, you actually could found it about a week earlier, around May 11th, the week of May 11th. So lots of people were finding the retail boxes. I couldn't find any in my town, but other people in other parts of the country can find it. I'm not exactly sure the reason for that. I don't know if it's an error or if it's on purpose that retail, for the most part, has been going live on most Topps baseball products a week earlier at Target and Walmart. I don't know if it's to give them a heads up, to hook them up a little bit. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe it sells well enough for Target where they want a deal on that. I'm not sure, but I find that kind of interesting. I know a bunch of hobby shop owners were mad at that. They were upset about that at the industry summit in Las Vegas. Everybody was upset that at that time Heritage had came out like a week or two prior to when it came out at the hobby level, and they just think that it just kind of kills their sales. It kind of kills the early buzz when a hobby shop had it. Really, maybe should be the other way around, because I don't think Target and Walmart's going to have any problem selling packs. For the most part, I bet the ones that sell pretty well are the ones in my town where there's really no other option unless you go online and things like that. But that out of the way, everybody can find this product now. Originally, boxes were pre-selling for around $65 and jumbo boxes for about $115, $116, probably including shipping in some cases, probably not including shipping, but under $70. But when I was at the sports card show in TriStar, the TriStar show in San Francisco, boxes were $100. I was thinking, I remember being there last year and 2010 boxes were still $75. And I think those got up to $180, $200. They're still selling for a lot of money. So I found that kind of interesting that the boxes did shoot up quite a bit. We still haven't seen the Bryce Harper Super Refractor pulled yet, at least on eBay. Somebody might have pulled it and might be keeping it or sold it offline or whatever. Those kind of things can definitely happen, but more than often not the case. But there are quite a few prospects in here. Paul Goldschmidt's in here. Brandon Belt. A lot of these guys have cards before. Even Bryce Harper goes back a few years. He has some cards. So, you know, you kind of have to be careful. There are some guys, Jerks and Profar, my brother has highlighted here. He's a pretty good guy. Michael Choice has autographs in here, but I know he has ones from 2010. Same with Zach Wheeler. Bryce Brentz has cards from earlier. Justin O'Connor, I was just checking out him. Colbin Vitek, he's a player for the Red Sox. He's playing very well, actually. Josh Sale also has cards from last year. So you want to check before you buy these guys rookies and you fork over big money. Go back and check to see if they have anything prior. Sometimes it's not necessarily the case. Sometimes they might have something from 2009 or 2010 or a USA card or something like that. And it's not a big deal. A lot of collectors will still pay a premium for a prospect's first Bowman card and things of that nature. Brandon Belt, I'm not exactly sure, has an autographed Bowman card. So that might be a fairly special card and things like that. And I know Bryce Harper's have been selling very well and things like that. We opened up a couple blaster boxes. There's kind of neat. 1 in 8 packs are the International Parallel. And if you remember, I think they've had this in almost all the sets. But I remember back in the day, those were worth quite a bit. It has like a map of where they're from or something behind it. There's Green Parallels. I pulled like 3 in 1 blaster boxes, but those apparently are pretty tough to get. And it goes down the line. You got Purple, and there's all kinds of other ones. And it goes all the way down to the Super Refractor. And so the Blues are out of 500. Greens are out of 450, at least on the Prospect Rookies. There's different variations, I think, for the base set and things like that. But in terms of the Super Refractor, 1 of 1, there's been some that have sold on eBay. My brother's highlighted a couple that are going to end here pretty soon. Some people want, some people have put on buy it nows. For example, Nate Freeman, he has like a $700 buy it now. And then the Paul Goldschmidt Super Refractor, I don't think that's autographed. It might be autographed. That might be just the face model autograph. He wants $14,000 for it. And last year, we know the Steven Strasburg sold for $16,000. So he wants quite a premium for that card. We'll see if he gets his final price or if he even gets close to that. But a couple have sold. Blake Forsythe, his Super Refractor doesn't look like his autograph. $220, best offer. That's pretty good. Jacob Gobert, his Super Refractor sold for $119 fairly recently. Looks like some of them might even be redemptions for some of the autograph. Kevin Rivers didn't sell for $500. And Kyle Russell, I'm actually somewhat familiar, I think, with his game. He's $375. At least I've looked at his other cards and maybe thought about buying them. But his sold for $375. So there's a handful of them on eBay if you got a big budget or if you're kind of into getting the Super Refractor or trying to hunt one down, or maybe you have a prospect that's not Bryce Harper and you might be able to afford, you know, $100, $200. If you're a big time collector and you have big time belief in the guy, that really isn't, I can't, you know, for a guy that's never played on a professional diamond, more than likely, it is quite a bit to pay for a card. But if you have, we've seen the value of these can go up tremendously over the years. Although very rare, it's very rare for a baseball player to continue to play well, but they pop up from time to time. We see the 1 of 1s pop up from time to time of really top end players, but usually these end up in the hands of collectors that want to hold on to them for either a very long time or maybe not even sell them. They're not interested in selling it at, you know, unless they really, really want to or really need to. So, you know, it is worth maybe jumping on there if you're into prospecting and stuff, jumping on there early, because once these sell, it is tough. You know, they don't reappear often, and when they do reappear, it's usually when the guy just hit like 2 home runs in back-to-back games or something. So you're usually paying a lot more. So but again, it takes prospecting skills. Bowman's not for everybody. I think people get excited about Topps Series 1 and Topps Heritage and even Gypsy Queen in some of those sets as much or more about Bowman. But Bowman definitely has its group of collectors where this is like one of their most favorite sets. This is what they don't collect Heritage as much. Kind of like me. I mean, I don't go out and buy blasters very often and want to open it up and have a desire to hold on to some of the cards, whereas most everything else, I'll give it away. I don't really care what it is. But with rookie cards and prospect cards, I've always been interested, especially with baseball, especially because there's so many of them. And I've noticed with the trading card challenge, and I'll probably give us a little update here on that why I'm here. But with the trading card challenge, I've noticed prospects go up and down, and it's not the ones in the major leagues. It's not the guys getting called up. In fact, the guys that I get called up, you know, it's very rare for a guy to get called up. Even we saw it with Brandon Belt with the Giants. If you're familiar, he was tearing up the minor leagues when he was there last year, and he is tearing it up now. They called him up at the beginning of the year. He kind of struggled. He didn't strike out a whole lot, but he wasn't hitting the ball. He wasn't making even really productive outs. He just wasn't doing a whole lot at the plate. So they sent him back down, and now he's tearing up minor league again. So, but I don't know how I know his cards were blowing up, and I'm sure they took a little bit of a hit since he came up. And we just saw that it's very tough for these players once they get called up to become a regular part of the lineup. I mean, I bought a Ben Revere refractor autograph rookie from 2007 or something, 2008. Pretty valuable card if he turns out to be a good player. I think I paid $13 for it. And he actually got, I bought it when he was in AAA, and he was having a pretty good season. He got really hot, and then they called him up to the major league. So you think, hey, that's the perfect time to put it on eBay. Well, that's what I did, and the card just hasn't sold. I mean, I'm trying to make a profit. I'm trying to sell it for like $15-16. So, I mean, I've got to make a profit in the little game I'm playing. So, but, you know, it's one of those things. A lot of people think when that guy gets called up, that card's going to be a $40 card, $30 card. It's just not the case. Even on the Twins, he's on the Twins. They have good players, not to hate on the Twins. They have good players. I think they're struggling in the win-loss column. But there's just not a whole lot of room in the lineup. So it's just one of those things. When guys get called up, there has to be that room spot in the lineup, that long-term injury. I think Brandon Belt might have stayed up longer if Cody Ross hadn't come back from his injury. Let's say his injury was for 6 months or something like that, or he had more like a Pablo Sandoval injury where he was out for 2 months, 3 months. He might have stayed up a little bit longer than he did. But those cases are rare. You know, players in baseball tend to bounce back from injuries. So, and usually a guy just doesn't lose a spot during the season. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, with prospecting and getting back to Bowman a little bit, it's not for everybody. But if you have belief in the players, and you really got to be looking to move these guys in and out, because most of these guys, as we look back, we have most of the Bowman and Bowman Chrome checklists on our sites. And as you look back, it is always only a handful of those guys make it. But if you look you know, from year to year inside those checklists, if you were able to go back a couple years, everybody moves up and down within the year, depending on how they're doing in the minor leagues. If you get called up through the system, or if it looks like you're quote unquote the hot prospect or the rising prospect in the system, you might get some attention, your cards might sell. But then once you get that opportunity, say it doesn't pan out, it doesn't work out for the player as it does for most, or they come up and they're like, you know, a 275 hitter, you know, they hit 14 home runs and they drive in 80 RBIs. To me, I wish I had that kind of baseball talent. I wish I was that good at baseball. I wish I could hit any. I wish I could play at that high level. But for collectors, we're looking for that guy that bats 300 plus, hits 20 plus home runs, 100 RBIs, is a superstar, is a recognizable person in the media, in, you know, across all segments of the media. So it just doesn't happen very often. You know, it's just very few players get that opportunity. Oftentimes it has to do with what team you're on and the kind of opportunities you get to win games. And the Giants are a perfect example. Bunch of guys on that team, outside of Tim Lincecum and a couple other guys that were bona fide superstars, even Brian Wilson was really nobody up until he grew his beard and the Giants won the World Series, to be honest with you. I mean, he was a really good closer and a really solid closer for many years for us, for a couple years, for several seasons for us. But it wasn't like he was getting all this attention and getting all this love until he grew and dyed his beard and grew like the most fake-looking real beard in the world. So, and there was plenty of other players on the Giants, from Pat Burrell, who was like dumped by Tampa Bay, from Cody Ross, who I think we traded for from Florida for nobody, I think. There's a lot of guys on the team. So it kind of depends. If your team can win, if they can bump themselves up into the national spotlight, it sometimes elevates everybody's cards and everybody's things. So those are the kind of things, you know, again, going back to Bowman, common, those are the kind of things you want to keep in mind. If you're buying a bunch of prospects, but he's on, you know, Bryce Harper's a special example. He's on the Washington Nationals. Whether or not they become a good team or not is debatable. And they're definitely one of the younger teams in a small market, and they don't have a huge, huge national following like the Yankees or the Cubs or the Giants do. But he's a special talent. Number one picks tend to get the slide for the most part. But you want to be careful with some of these mid-range guys, the guys that play. Even someone like Michael Choice might be a good example. A guy that plays for the A's, looks to be a solid player. Is pretty impressive physically, but he's not like 6'3" or 6'5" or something like that. Like some of these, like Brandon Belt. Brandon Belt's a really tall kid. So, you know, you got to be careful with some of these guys that they'll probably progress to a major league talent, but will they progress to that 300 plus that it takes, especially if you're on a team like Oakland, especially if you're on a team like, I feel comfortable hating on the Oakland A's because they're not that far away, and I do support them every once in a while by going to games and buying tickets and stuff like that, so I don't feel that bad. But, you know, smaller market teams with not as big fan bases, you got to be careful buying their prospects, because unless they come up to that team and then produce at a very high level, or they're one of the best players on the team and maybe one of the best players in the league or even the whole division, then you got to be very careful, because you know, unless they're on a big market team and they're on Fox and they're getting all kinds of attention, you know, those kind of things do play into prices. However, production, nothing ever hides production. If you're batting 350 for the Marlins or you're batting 350 for the Twins, it doesn't matter, and you're hitting a bunch of home runs, it doesn't matter. Everybody's going to be wanting your cards. That Jose Bautista guy is hitting a bunch of home runs. I remember in fantasy, I was looking at him. I wasn't too familiar with his performance the previous season because I was kind of wrapped up with the Giants. But I saw he hit a bunch of home runs last year, so I was thinking, man, what happened? Did he have a great workout in the gym or what? And I was thinking, man, I just don't see him doing it. But it looks like he's on pace again to have a really nice season home run total. So he's either got his stroke down or something's working for him. I tell you what, because people don't hit home runs at that clip quite as often as they do. Obviously, we found out why people used to be doing it. But it just seems like nowadays, it just seems even that much more special when a guy's hitting home runs. We hope it's clean. I know there's all kinds of stuff out there that all of us probably don't even know about, unless you're really like up in the fitness world and up in like the workout world. So, you know, hopefully everything works out. Hopefully the home runs are clean. I'm not accusing the guy of anything, but as we've seen, you know, if you grew up in my generation, our entire generation is going to be like totally skeptical of everybody's performances. And it's kind of too bad in a ways, but I think the leagues have taken a nice step in the right directions to kind of clean it up. Definitely seen it in minor league baseball. I think minor league baseball used to be a lot dirtier, quote unquote. I think it was as dirty as the major league game was back in the day, because the pressure for these guys to move up through the system and get that big contract and start, you know, flying commercial jets instead of riding the bus between games. My brother was telling me there's a team, we have a team in Stockton here, and about 30 minutes away, depending on how fast you drive and where you're going in Modesto, there's a team there. So about 30-40 minutes away. So he was telling me that the guys, you know, they come in and they play the game and they drive back to Modesto, and then they wake up in the morning and they come back to Stockton. So that's the life of a minor leaguer right there. Even the number one picks and the guys with the $6 million bonuses and stuff like that, they're riding the bus in the morning every other day or every day to twice a day to get to the ballpark and back. So I found that kind of interesting. I'm sure there's even further distances people have traveled to get between games and stuff like that. I'm sure it's a pretty tough lifestyle. So the guys that are performing at a high level in the minor leagues, we've got to have a lot of respect for them because they're performing at a high level, albeit against lower talent, but albeit, you know, the conditions in which they're performing are pretty stressful. I wouldn't be able to perform at a high level at just about any job if I was having to travel each day back and forth, do it back and forth. You know, some people can handle that, but man, I really give credit to the athletes, especially the pro athletes, because although flying is a lot more comfortable, So oftentimes you're flying across country and there's delays in the flights, or you're landing somewhere else and you're driving in and you're getting sleep in weird positions, and you got to get out and perform. It's pretty impressive. So hopefully your prospects and your players are all getting good sleep and getting good rest, and they don't mind the travel, and hopping on a 4 or 5 hour plane ride is no big deal for them after a 3 hour NBA game or whatever. Hopefully they're all performing. Hopefully if you hit up some Bowman, let me know how you do. I've seen some of the performance on our forum and stuff like that, and seen some of the trades. I might have some base cards. If anybody needs some base, or I think I have a couple gold, I'm sending a lot to check out my cards.com. As I said earlier, they run in that little voucher, and I actually checked just now at my status. It says 95%. So I've got 486 cards. It's 95% done. So it still says it's due on the 26th. So several days from now, it says it's due. So I'm not sure if I'll have to wait on that 95% or if it'll actually clear today. So, or tomorrow, we'll see what happens. But I just found that interesting. I clicked refresh, or I was like seeing if I sold anything or whatever. Or I actually had an offer on a card. I always like check out my cards. My brother said, I'll share this strategy as we close out today's show, a little strategy from the trading card challenge. I said I was going to give you an update, and I might as well, since I'm up 18.37%. I've invested $100, and my profit buying and selling is $18. So I'm at $118.37. I have $39 in cash to do whatever I please with, and I have $78 in cards, in real value that I've paid for them. My brother's up 9.56, so he's up almost 10%, and he has $35 in cash and $73 in cards. So there's the little update. But my brother was saying there's some very high volume sellers on Check Out My Cards, and often they have very good prices on their cards, and more often than not, you find yourself making offers on their cards, and some of them are good at getting back to you. Some of them just outright reject them. But most of the time, it's a pretty tight squeeze. So you know, if they have a card listed for $550 and you come in there at $350, you're kind of insulting them because they already have it at a fairly low price. So if they have it for $550, some of them I know will come down. Some of them I know off the top of my head, like Jay Sayow, will usually come down. I don't know if it's bad for me to be promoting this. I mean, it's sales for him, and if he's accepting the offer, he's probably doing pretty well on it. But he'll come down maybe like 50 cents, 25 cents in some cases, but not usually like that much more. I haven't had that much success. But there's some sellers, my brother was saying, my brother sometimes makes these offers like 50% off. Sometimes he had the card listed. One time my brother said he had the card listed for like $1.80, and he offered, it was like an autograph card of somebody. He had the card listed for $1.80, and my brother offered him 60 cents and he accepted it. And I would have never offered 60 cents. I would have maybe gone to a dollar or like 95 cents or something like that, but I never would have gone all the way down to 60 cents. But my brother was saying, hey, you know, he was a small seller. Some of these small guys on there with not that many cards, maybe for them, it's a little more rare to have a sale. And when they have the opportunity to make a sale, maybe they want to free up some funds, or, you know, the end of the month's coming and they got the fees coming. So whereas the bigger sellers, they know the sales are coming all the time. They don't necessarily have to move on something because they know chances are it's going to sell next week at a little higher price. So my brother found that he lowballs the newer sellers or the sellers with not that many cards to see what they're willing to do. And he's had decent success. I've noticed he's made some offers that seem to me to be ridiculous, and the people just outright accepted them. And I was thinking, wow, he probably could have gone even lower. So I just think, just to throw that in there, the little trading card challenge update and a little insight into Check Out My Cards. We'll see if it holds true. And since I'm like 95% almost done with my card sales, you could check ours out. You might as well check out my cards. I think it's slash my username Sports Card Radio. You can find me on there. No spaces. So that about wraps this podcast up. Hopefully everything's going well for you guys. Hopefully everything's going good for your collections. I'll stress it. Now that I'm doing this challenge and I'm up 18%, quote unquote, I mean, you could say I have some cards. Like I said, I bought the Ben Revere refractor autograph for like $13, and I'm having trouble even grinding out like a 50-cent profit on eBay, although I could probably maybe send it in to check out my cards, and I've debated that. That's probably could be a whole podcast about debating on whether or not to send that card to check out my cards because he's in the majors and I'd be waiting 4 weeks. It's one of those things. You gotta kind of gotta weigh your options there, so I'm not exactly sure yet. But you know, you gotta. Hopefully, everything's going good for your collection. Hopefully, you don't got too many Ben Revere's in your collection. But definitely set a budget. Since I'm up 18%, I really think it has to do. It has nothing to do with my knowledge of baseball or prospects or anything. To be honest with you, it really I think has a lot to do. And my brother's up 9%. That might have a little bit more to do with some knowledge. But mine has nothing to do with knowledge of baseball or knowing any of these guys' potential. It really just has to do with setting a budget and willing to accept offers for profit. When a guy offers you, you know, if it looks like you can get 50 cents more than what you paid for it, or 20 cents more, or in a lot of cases, sometimes I've sold a card for a penny or two more than I paid for it. But when you can lock in that profit and you're on a budget and you can't add to your bankroll just out of free whim, you know, locking in a profit, freeing up some cash is always a good thing to do. So I strongly encourage you to do that if you're having trouble with your collection, if you're finding you're hitting that brick wall, if you're like, man, I don't know what to collect. I don't know, you know, some of the stuff that I bought is worthless now. Well, set a budget, set a low budget, high budget, whatever you're comfortable with, and stick to it. And keep track of it somehow, and keep updating it, and keep yourself to it. And I think you'll find that you'll have a little bit more success, and open yourself up to buying and selling a little bit more. Because, like I said with the Bowman, none of these prospects are going to work out. Not none of them, but very few of them are going to work out, and very few of them are going to become elite players. If any, very few usually become elite players that we all recognize on TV and that even casual fans are interested in. So keep that in mind when you're collecting. But they do move, as I've seen in the trading card challenge. Everybody I've sold pretty much is still in the minors and is just doing good in the minors. So, and some of them aren't even doing that well in the minors. So it doesn't even have to, they don't even have to do that well. So it does go up and down year to year, but in the long term, I wouldn't consider prospecting like hold on to it. You want to sell it when you got to tie the show up. You definitely want to sell these prospects when you have the chance. So that's just my opinion. If you got a different opinion, you can send us an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com, and I'm going to get our phone line working again. I got to clean up this computer today. It's got, I don't know if it's got a virus on it. It's just probably got way too much stuff on it. I've got all these podcasts and videos and pictures and all kinds of stuff I've got to just go through and kind of clean it out. So I got to do that today. Got to ship out some stuff on eBay. Hopefully everybody is doing good. And send me an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com. Check out our website. Check out our sponsors' websites as well if you have your free time and you need to buy some boxes or want some info. You can go to cardboardconnection.com and baseballfactorysets.com as well. Folks, that's about it today. We are out of here.